ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Food.
If you've got an interest in art, architecture, award-winning cuisine, and breathtaking coastline, then Lima could be just the ticket. The capital of Peru is a bustling metropolis with a rich and diverse food scene, and in fact is home to more restaurants in the world's 50 best than any other city. I know this might surprise you. Surprise me. We'll talk about some of those in the list and also unwrap why it's a city so obsessed with the sandwich. Our intrepid traveller and tasting guide is the creative director of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, Pat Nurse, who's recently been lucky enough to look around Lima. Pat, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Apparently, they also invented punk rock.
Really? No.
Yeah, a friend of mine said to me in the back of an Uber, a Limeña friend of mine, she said, check out a band called the Psychos, Los Psychos. And I said, surely they don't predate, you know, AC/DC or other fine Australian hard rocking musical acts. And she says, you know, mid-60s, if you listen to Los Psychos, spelled the Spanish way with an S, it'll blow your mind.
Okay, thanks for the tip. What is it with food in Lima, of all places? I mean, it's because it's the Spanish conquest, then there's a lot of Japanese immigration, isn't it? That's mixed in with indigenous culture. Of course, the Andean, the culture of the high Andes, or Lima's down on the coast, though. It's now viewed, is that what makes it? It's viewed as one of the restaurant capitals of the world, including being home, they say, to the world's number one restaurant, whatever that means, called Central. Tell us all about that.
All the things you say, Phil, I mean, they've certainly got a lot going on. You know, on the one hand, you've got a city of 12 million souls sitting right on the Humboldt Current running down the Pacific coast of South America. Then you've got this incredibly diverse landscape. So you've got that coastal climate, which is oddly dry, because the Humboldt Current is cold, so any moisture condenses into precipitation before it hits land. Then you've got the jungle, of course, the Amazon, and then you've got desert. I think the driest place in the world is the Atacama Desert. And then you've got the Andes, as you say. And then across each of those regions, you've got the cultural overlays. So there's many, many different groups of people that existed and exist before the Incas, let alone the conquistadors. And then you've got 19th and 20th century migration. And while there are lots of cities in South and Latin America that are home to lots of people from China and from Japan, to take two examples, I can't think of that many that have a really evolved and internationally known cuisine, a fusion cuisine with Japan and the local culture, or with China and the local culture, in the way that Peru does. So there's a lot going on there.
Were you able to eat at any of these top places?
I did my utmost to eat at all of them. It was a heavy few days on the fork. But as you know, I'm a trained professional to the menu born. And I did the hard yards on your behalf. And I can say, as you know, someone who spent a lot of time at, you know, restaurants that are named the world's best, whatever that means, as you say, there's a very credible argument that these places like Central, like Maido, like Maita are up there with the world's best. They're certainly some of the most interesting places I've been in a long time. They have all the polish that you would expect of a very, very high-end restaurant in Paris or Tokyo or the world capital of cuisine, Melbourne, but they're infused with these incredible ingredients, you know, these things that they're pulling out of their side of the Pacific or that are coming out of the jungle. Even the familiar things, you know, because they're closer to the source, because you're getting ingredients and plants that haven't been, you know, domesticated as thoroughly. Like the potato comes from Peru and you're eating potatoes that just don't taste like any other potato you've ever had before. Or to eat chocolate, the way some of these guys can source their chocolate straight from the Amazon.
Well, that's where it came from, wasn't it?
Really extraordinary.
That's where it came from. That's in the first place, wasn't it? It was a bitter drink of the Andes, wasn't it? Chocolate.
The drink of the gods. I think the Latin name Theobroma, you know, really comes to life when you're having the fresh stuff. And actually one interesting note there is that the people of Lima are in some ways newly enthralled to Peruvian chocolate and Peruvian coffee, because the years of terrorism with the Shining Path, which is a separatist group, cut the city off from supply of those foods.
Yeah, it did. It did. I'm really interested in this fusion idea, because it's, I suppose, in truth, the Japanese don't emigrate very many times. I mean, famously, they did to Peru for a period, and the Japanese influence in this is in Lima anyway, not so much in the Andes, of course. But
I can only speak to Lima. So,
and I'm thinking, is this the reason for it really? Because this magic fusion maybe comes about because of, well, we know the Japanese penchant for fine food. But tell us about the lomo saltado, which is a kind of national dish of Peru. And this is the fusion, is it, that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, if I can skip backwards to one dish, just speaking on the Japanese thing, Phil, the Japanese fusion cuisine in Peru is called nikkei. And I guess when you think about the fact that one of Peru's national dishes is ceviche, which is fish that's basically raw and cured in lime juice.
Yeah.
You might kind of find a connection there with Japanese food. There's another basically raw fish dish called tiradito. So, you know, there's not that many raw fish cultures. So maybe that was the starting point. And Nobu Matsuhisa, you know, that is probably one of the, unquestionably, you know, one of the world's most famous Japanese chefs. He cooked in Peru for a time before he became a mononym. And it's that inclusion of some elements that he got into while he was in Peru that distinguished his cuisine. His style of cooking is called new style sushi, and the use of things like chilies he picked up cooking in Peru.
He would have, yeah. Tell me about lomo saltado.
Lomo saltado is, in some ways, like steak and chips that's been tossed in a wok. It's the national dish of Peru, I would say. It's a dish that comes from the chifa tradition. So chifa is what Peruvian people call their Chinese fusion cuisine. So lots of people from Guangzhou province, Cantonese people, migrated to Peru for work in the mid 19th and early 20th centuries, and they brought with them their ways of cooking food, so cutting things up small and cooking them in a wok. And through their interaction with the produce that was available to them, and then people liking what they were doing, this cuisine was born. And it's very, very popular in Lima. It's not some niche thing that's just for food elites. It's a food of the everyday people. It's a very popular weekend food with regular Joes in Lima. Or regular Jose's, if you will. Jose's regularos, I think that the correct term is. And well, I mean, to the extent
Romo's regularos.
To the extent that one day I was driving down the street in one neighborhood in an Uber, and there was a big piece of graffiti spray painted on the wall that says, "Chifa is life." But to skip back to lomo saltado, it's thick slices of beef, usually sirloin, I believe, tossed in a wok with fried potatoes, onions, and aji amarillo. And that's the small, hot, yellow chili that's very central to the cuisine of Peru, with a healthy amount of soy sauce and, in some instances, the benefit of some MSG. And whoa, baby, like this is a rib-sticking dish. You know, if you've got a lot of people to feed or a hangover to kill, lomo saltado is your friend, particularly when taken in conjunction with its traditional beverage accompaniment, which is called Inca Cola. apparently Peru was one of the few territories in the world where the native cola product outsold Coca-Cola. And Coca-Cola then promptly bought the company. But still, if you go into any convenience store or cafe or chifa restaurant anywhere in Lima, there will be Inca Kola proudly sitting on the shelf. It tastes a little bit like liquid bubble gum. I'm going to say it's an acquired taste, but perhaps it's a taste worth acquiring.
Yeah. Why is the city obsessed with sandwiches?
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you be? I mean, that's the question.
I'll rephrase my question. Everyone makes a good sandwich, don't they? China doesn't make a really great sandwich.
No, it depends on how far you want to stretch the definition, but there are definitely some pretty tasty things wrapped in bread in China. But in Peru, I believe that it is owed to Italian migrants. Uh-huh. In this case, like Australia, lots of southerners, but unlike Australia, lots of people from the north as well. There's quite a significant migrant group from Liguria in Peru. So they provided the basis for what we would call panini and what our friends in Peru call sanguches. And a typical sanguche is probably stuffed with either roast pork or fried fish on a kind of crusty white bap or a crusty white roll. And the thing that makes these sandwiches, I think, I mean, that's a very good start, but they put something called salsa criolla on that. Criolla means Creole in South American Spanish. And the salsa criolla of Peru is red onions and chilies marinated in lime juice with coriander leaf. And gosh, it's good on a sandwich. It sort of kind of recalls that pleasant pickly flavor that you get with a good Vietnamese baguette. Wow. You've got that rich meat and then that zing of the pickle there. It's really something. And everyone I met when I was in Lima, I was like, tell me about what your favorite thing is to eat. And to a person, they all said sanguches. Sanguches are Lima.
Did you eat the guinea pig, the koi?
I ate the guinea pig. I'm pleased to report that I ate the guinea pig within 3 hours of stepping off an airplane in Lima.
I had quite a few of them when I was there, I must say.
What's your preferred guinea pig treatment, Phil?
I don't know. I just remember eating them roasted. I don't remember eating them any other way, really, but they were delicious, I thought.
I had mine Peking duck style, which was a bit of a play on a chifa dish. And then the restaurant where I had it, Astrid y Gaston, which is sort of a very celebrated, long-established Lima landmark. In an interesting twist, they also do a cocktail with some of the roasting juices, the braising juices from your guinea pig. So think about that for your next entertainment.
We're heading into party season.
So think about spicing up your next soiree with some sort of guinea pig flavored Manhattan.
That's right. It's quite a delicious little dish, the guinea pig, I must say, once you move on from Western ickiness about eating them, I guess.
When people ask you what it was like, how did you describe it? I thought it was something like a cross between a rabbit and a duck.
Yeah, that's right. I think that would go with that. Rabbit to me, yeah, because I'm a great fan of rabbit, but I think that's right. That's sort of flavor. Yeah.
As much as I was interested to try the cocktail with the guinea pig in it, I think there's something to be said for the national drink of Peru, the Pisco Sour.
The Pisco Sour.
A truly fine cocktail.
What a drink. What a drink is the Pisco Sour, isn't it? Yes, I know. It's like the Caipirinha is to Brazil, don't you think?
I think, they're not hard to get in a good cocktail bar in Australia. If you lob into a good cocktail bar in Brisbane or Canberra.
They just need a bottle of Pisco.
That's it. So grape brandy, lime juice, egg white, and the crown and glory, a couple of splashes of Angostura bitters. Mm. Made well, that is one of the world's truly great cocktails.
Yeah, it is delicious. Yes, it's had its share of political problems in recent years. I'm glad to hear that the
Pisco Sour.
What's that?
The Pisco Sour.
No, not the Pisco Sour, Peru, of course, and Lima in particular. I'm glad to see that drinks and food surviving well. All right, Pat, great to talk. Thank you.
Viva Peru.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.